everybody, and welcome to Mass Radio Sports Talk, presented by its 3.5 athletes on Loot Air Student Radio. My name is Christian Bond. I am accompanied by Kellen Westering, Lacey Nicholson, and Drew Artisoni. Lacey, how was your week this week?
It's been good so far. I was able to go to Texas this last weekend. I was able to watch the Lutes play down there while also being able to hang out with my sister, who actually lives in Abilene, Texas. So she drove about 3.5 hours to the game, and we stayed in San Antonio downtown. And Texas is humid, I will say that. I don't know how the guys were able to play in that heat, but we'll get to that later.
Drew, how your week been, man?
Week's been good. Very busy with all the home games coming this way for PLU. Been a great broadcasting week. Women's soccer has been phenomenal to do. Volleyball was a ton of fun despite their stumble last night. And men's soccer has been still pretty painful.
All right, Kellen, how you been, man?
You know, Uni has those
Always with a story?
So Uni has those punch cards, Drew, and you know, you get about 10 punches and you get a free meal. I've lived in Parkland now for about 5.5 years, and I think when it comes to All-Star Auto Glass, if there was a punch card for that with how many times my window's been broken into,
oh, God, I'm sorry,
I would have a free window repair. But unfortunately, All-Star Auto Glass doesn't quite do the whole punch card deal. Parkland, it's tough to live here. I got to be honest, guys. If there wasn't football and this show, I'd go to UPS.
Oh, man. Oh, jeez.
Wow.
Okay.
Well, what a way to start the show, Kellen.
All right.
Good Lord.
That's fine.
Christian, how was your week, sir?
My week was fine. I was plenty busy during the beginning of the week with schoolwork and all that fun stuff. This morning, I broke the switch on my car window, so my car is sitting outside right now with the window rolled completely down.
In Parkland.
So, you know, if you want something out of there, go ahead and take it. I'm kind of asking for it right now, but that's about it. That's how I feel right now, so that's about it.
Well, folks, we want to remind those of you who are listening to this show that most of the stories we will be talking about today can be found at massmedia.plu.edu. We want to hear from you, our listeners, throughout the show. Feel free to call into the show at any time. The number to call is 253-535-7332. That is 253-535-7332.
All right, let's get the show started with a little POU football. Like Lacey mentioned, they traveled down to Trinity, Texas this past weekend. Turned out to be an extremely tight ball game. These two teams combined to score only 12 points on the night, so it was a defensive battle. Trinity scored first early in the second quarter with a Kobe Doyle 20-yard field goal. Drive was 12 plays, 53 yards, and it took 4 minutes and 34 seconds. Not a point was scored until early in the fourth quarter when POU got on the board with a Dallin Rodriguez 38-yard field goal. That drive was 8 plays for 47 yards. It took 3 minutes and 49 seconds. Trinity got the ball with 4:29 remaining in the game. The Tigers managed to go 92 yards in 12 plays in 4 minutes and 13 seconds. Evan McDowell capped it off with a 2-yard run. Trinity missed the extra point. So there was still hope for POU to take the ball down the field, but that was a lot to ask, and Trinity ended up winning 9-3. So Lacey, you saw what was going on. What did you see?
Well, first I have to give credit to the Trinity Tigers, specifically running back. You already hit on him, Evan McDowell, who finished off the play, the 12-play, 92-yard fourth-quarter drive with a 2-yard touchdown run. In the final seconds of the game, McDowell had 65 rushing yards on the scoring drive, including a 28-yard run on 3rd and 19 to keep the drive alive. McDowell already has 4 touchdowns in just 3 games for the Tigers. He's averaging 5.8 yards per rush, and the Lutes were just unable to stop him.
You had to bring up the 3rd and 19, Lacey. That was painful.
Yeah, that's gotta hurt. That's gotta smart a little.
Great
bit.
Call by their OC. They were in a halfback draw. We were in prevent defense, basically thinking they were gonna pass the ball as everyone else in the stadium did. Great call there by the OC. You know, guys, I want to highlight Cole Chandler. You know, our quarterback one, John Schaub, went down with it looked like an apparent knee injury. I know Lacey was up in the stands, kind of doing that, you know, emoji with the monkey face there with the closed eyes. But I think it looks like it's just gonna be a hamstring, which is exciting. I know as a quarterback, John's not very mobile anyway, so the fact that it's a hamstring, it's not like he really needs to run very much. And so, you know, he can sit back in the pocket when he does hopefully come back and play here for the Pacific game. We have a bye this week, which is awesome for us to get healthy. But Cole Chandler came in, second quarter, was confident in the huddle, which was great to see again for only a sophomore. He was 12 of 15. And so when you see 12 of 15 for 139 yards, you think, wow, that's a great game. Unfortunately, there was no touchdowns thrown. The tough thing was three of those incompletions were two interceptions. And so they were two big-time picks. Great plays by their guys, but at the same time, that really killed a couple drives. Not to throw them under the bus. I know I talked to Cole about this yesterday, and he said, absolutely, I can say it on the air. We had a 3rd-and-2 call on our own 45, and the play is basically it's a fake dive, and everyone crashes, and then he pitches it out to Mark on the option. And the option was wide open. He doesn't pitch the football. He tries to be Superman, tries to get the first down himself. We end up losing yards. And so, again, these are things that Cole's learning. Only a sophomore, and so the exciting thing is he's got two more years after this. But, again, a little bit of a frustrating finish there down in Texas, 9-3. They scored on that last drive. We had about 16 seconds left to run one final play there. And so, no question, a tough loss. But, again, exciting to see the Lutes competing way, way better than we did last year.
Absolutely. It's a great start so far this year. Drew, what did you see over the weekend?
You know, Mark Gallant runs the ball hard.
Absolutely.
There's no really other way to put that. Mark Gallant puts his head down, run hard. I don't understand why he doesn't get more touches. He only gets, 12 touches? He only got 12 touches against Trandy. The rest of it was spread out. I mean, when your quarterback is running the ball as much as your running back, who is your quarterback? Is he a running back or a quarterback? I can't decide yet. Now, Cole played a great game, Kellen. It was 12 for 15. Yeah, he threw two picks. Probably one of them was his fault. The other one wasn't. But he just can't continue to look at the line of scrimmage the way he does like a running back. He reads the line of scrimmage like a running back. He's got to get his eyes up and look at the safety. I feel like that's why he took one of his two sacks, is because he was so worried about the line. And now, mind you, the offensive line is better than it was last year. Still not good, but serviceable. So I think maybe that's why they're so hesitant to give, you know, Mark more touches. But, you know, you look at Trandy, and they throw the ball, and, you know, they run the ball 43 times, and you guys run the ball 34 times, but their number one back carries the ball 25 times, and Mark only gets 12 touches. And Darren Hardgrove, who's another power shifty running back, only touched the ball 4 times all day. I was just kind of confused with the game plan. It seemed very inconsistent in terms of running the ball and who was actually going to do the running, whether your quarterback was going to be a running back or not.
What pick was it his fault?
I think it was the second one.
He threw it right to him.
I thought the guy was supposed to go underneath instead of over the top. I thought that's what Cole saw. I thought he was going to look for the underneath break instead of the over the top break.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And so he threw the ball on time. It just, since the guy didn't go up and underneath, ball hit the dude in the chest.
Right.
Yeah.
So are you picking apart the offensive line, Drew? Is that what you're at?
I think there's a lack in trust in the offensive line on Cole's behalf and on Scott's behalf.
Okay. Kellen, you could speak to it more than I can. I am going to disagree with it.
Well, I mean, I think I understand where Drew's coming from. Again, a former quarterback from high school. I think you look at the play calling again. You look at Cole's first game against Cal Lu. You really couldn't trust his throws. So I know my dad didn't quite trust his throws over the middle. Again, you got to look at street cred. And right now, again, we never want John to be hurt, obviously. You know, Lacey can throw in on that one. But I think right now it's the best situation because Cole needs to practice.
Yeah.
You know, Cole's been getting these second team reps, which is fine. It's awesome to even get reps in practice. But I think John, you know, knows the offense better than anybody on the team. And he's, in my opinion, he's more accurate than Max Brown. We'll get to that later. But John is extremely accurate. And so right now, yes, John hates not practicing, but Cole needs these reps. And so I think, again, when it comes to play calling, I mean, guys, you know, again, it's way easier said than done. The quarterback position is so tough to play. But there was not to boost my ego or Bo Lockmere's ego, but Bo and I each should have had 2 touchdowns each.
Oh, yeah.
So 4 touchdowns overall. If Cole hits one of those, if John hits one of those, we win the ball game.
That's an eyes up thing. And here's the other thing, Kellen, is I talked to your dad yesterday. We sat down, we talked for about 10 minutes. And he explained to me, and you reaffirmed what he said about you guys are a big play offense, not a move the chains offense. That really, really bothered me with the kind of team you guys have. I think you guys have to take what the defense gives you at some point. I think big plays are great, but you know, you don't have guys, you don't have you and Kyle Warner and Dalton Ritchie anymore. You don't have these Division III superstars who are big play guys anymore. You know, you got John Schaub, who's a solid, solid quarterback, good quick drop guy, pretty much unbeatable 30 yards and in terms of Division III. Let's just move the change. Have a little fun. You know what I mean? Even Cole. Yeah, we don't trust Cole's arm all that. So why don't we just give him 5 to 10 little swing passes, one-step slants, get the dude going. Two teams, back-to-back, have run cover one or man free on you guys, and there's not been one slant thrown. I was so confused. I'm confused.
Right.
Let's move the chains. That's part of football. 3 times 4 or 4 times 3, that's 12. That's a first down.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it in 3 downs or 4 downs. I don't care, but you guys need to move the chains. It's the only way you're going to score.
Right. And it was interesting looking at the game. We ran 61 plays. We normally run about 72. And
yeah.
So it was a weird game offensively. I know, again, we had some good drives going, and then those two picks occurred. And, well, the last one, again, was that last play of the game. But I think it's one of those things where it just kind of comes down to execution. And it's going to be exciting to see, again, as Cole begins to learn the offense. Because, again, you know, Drew, we had about, out of the 61 plays, we probably had tri-slant, which is our route.
Yeah.
We probably had that called 8 times. Cole drops back, pressure. Has to run. So again, from a fan's perspective, run slant. Well, we did run slant, but the protection broke down.
Which goes back to the O-line problem.
Right, exactly. So again, those, in my opinion, my dad called a pretty solid game. Again, there were times where, again, we can always criticize, oh, we should have run this, we should have run that. Well, we do run those plays, but sometimes the route's open, but the line doesn't break down, or the line does a great job blocking, but yeah, I couldn't get off the guy, so the route never developed. So it was one of those things where just everything went wrong, did go wrong in that, yeah, on those drives. So.
And it seemed like the offense just couldn't get into rhythm. I mean, you're giving a player's point of view, but from the fans' point of view, yeah, there was just no rhythm in the offense. You guys couldn't move the ball up the field. The defense had some great big momentum plays to give you guys a second chance, and we just weren't working the ball down the field. And I'm wondering, too, if being in Texas, you guys were on a grass field, which you're not used to. It was hot, 70 yes, or 95 degrees with insane humidity. You guys had some guys sick on the sidelines.
Had to go to the hospital.
Yeah, and also to add, the Trinity fans were not the nicest. You guys had some people yelling stuff at you. Was that a factor?
Yeah, I mean, well, I never want to say outside, you know, outside influences affected our play at all.
Right.
It was fun. It was fun to hear those, you know, those drunk guys from the apartments above. I mean, I enjoyed that part. That kind of fueled my fire a little bit. But I think, you know, when it comes to the heat, no question about it. I wore long sleeves all week of practice. We practiced twice on the grass field, so we did as much as we could. I had about 3 Pedialytes during the game, was peeing before the game. Believe me, it was clear. But here's the thing. You can only do so much. And talking to the Trinity guys after the game, they said, hey, you know, at the end of the day, if we played at Sparks, I'm surprised they even knew what our field was called, but they said if we played you guys at Sparks, you guys would have beat us. So I think they knew, no question, the heat had a big factor towards them. They kind of had that edge. Again, Trinity's a good football team, but the thing that was so frustrating was that night knowing you lost to a team that you should have beat.
Yeah.
And that's the worst. You know that as a basketball player.
Yeah.
Christian, you know that coaching baseball. Lacey, obviously, you know that being a basketball player here at PLU. So when you lose to a team that you should have beat, those are the hardest things to flush. But again, thankfully, the PLU football program teaches us to flush these kinds of games and look at them as motivation. We have a bye week now to get healthy before a great game in 2 weeks against Pacific, who's going to be a great Northwest Conference matchup.
You know, Kellen, if I could appeal to you really quick, just it's a long – I mean, to ask you sort of an interview style, is that a long way to go to score only 3 points as an offensive player?
Going to Texas to score 3?
Is that just a long way to go?
Man.
I mean, that's just got to weigh on you. I mean,
right. Oh, are you kidding me? Yeah.
You flew more hours than you scored points.
Exactly. That's a great point.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yes. We spent more time at the Alamo than we scored points. That's right.
Yeah.
So
let's jump to the defensive side of the ball. Travis McMillian led the way with 6 solo tackles and 5 assists for 11 total tackles. McMillian had 2.5 tackles for loss for 6 yards. Travis also had an interception on the game, so he, again,
huge.
Travis McMillian's a stud. Right. He's going to be like this all year long if he stays healthy, and he most likely will, hopefully. So, Lacey, what do you think?
I think Travis is a great defensive player. He's obviously got the stats to prove it, but he also has amazing defense behind him and with him. And on that interception, I can't remember, Kellen, you'll have to remind me, someone tipped the ball.
Isaiah Watkins
tipped the ball so that Travis could get the interception. So that just shows, I mean, it's a total team effort, and it's really fun to watch this PLU defense. They're flying all over the place, and they're really working together.
That was a great heads-up play by Travis taking that tip. I also want to tip my hat to the guys in the box, 5 total sacks. You know, you get the quarterback down, get them to lose yards. Trinity had trouble coming back from it. I mean, they escaped death one time on 3rd and 19. We already talked about it. You sack people, you sack quarterbacks, you're going to, you know, plays for loss are always going to help you on the defense side of the ball. I also think it's kind of what hurt y'all in the end was that, you know, you guys, they were, your guys' defense was on the field for so long. Trinity ran so many plays. It was ridiculous. But defense did their job, held stout, 9 points, nothing to be, nope. Something to write home about. Yeah, we flew to Texas, held Texas offense to 9 points.
Yeah.
That's, you know, darn impressive.
Yeah, to your point, Drew, it's interesting you say that because when it comes to time of possession, we actually had the ball longer than they did. So we had the ball for 33 minutes, and they had it for 26 minutes. We, like I said in the beginning, we ran only 61 plays. Normally we average about 72. So our offense totaled 302 yards, and the Tigers totaled 250 yards. Again, Lacey mentioned that last drive they converted to 3rd and 8, and it was such a classic play. They basically have a very, very poor man's Johnny Manziel at quarterback for them, about 5'8". He's rolling out of the pocket. Travis is caught. He's in the middle. He's playing the receiver, but he also thinks that the quarterback can run because the quarterback has shown that he can run.
Yeah.
And so Travis comes up to the quarterback, puts his hands in the air. The quarterback throws a nice little dime pass right over Travis's head. The receiver makes a nice little, you know, kind of a cradle catch to get that first down. Then 2 plays later, 3rd and 22, 3rd and 19, sorry, and they run a draw play, and the running back gets about 45 yards, high knees. He runs with aggression. He runs with a purpose, breaks about 3 or 4 tackles, gets Trinity sideline back in the game, and then after that, they dink and dank for a couple more yards to kind of get in field goal position, and then they ended up scoring, ended up winning the football game. It was so hard as an offensive guy being on that sideline, fellas, and Lacey, because watching our defense struggle, a couple guys went down getting hurt. It was like, they shouldn't even be in that position. They shouldn't even, that drive shouldn't have even mattered.
Yeah.
We should have put up enough points. If Cole and John hit me on that post, hit me on that yo switch, hit Bo on the yo switch, it shouldn't even be in that, you know, shouldn't have meant anything on that last drive. So that was extremely frustrating. Christian, I know we kind of got to get to our heroes from the game here.
To put it into perspective, Trinity passed for 53 total yards.
Oh,
Evan
geez.
McDowell, their running back, he had 189.
Wow.
So it shows how important he was.
And he's their second string guy. We shut their first string guy down. So that guy obviously made a name for himself that
exactly.
game.
Exactly. Yeah, he had an outstanding game. But POU defense was stiff. All right, let's do it again. Let's pick a hero from the game. Let's go quick.
I'm going with Anthony Louthan, the punter.
That's right.
Taking a page out of Christian's book.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, well, shoot. The guy is a stud. He blasted 5 punts for 190 yards. Anthony averaged 38 yards per punt. Halfway through the first quarter, he gained 12 yards on the ground on a fake. So I think his punts are really giving some momentum to the Lutes defense.
He's turned punting into a positive thing.
Yeah.
You know, all the time you hear broadcasts go, oh, they're forced to punt. Well, POU doesn't mind it because now the opposing offense has twice as far to go.
Mm-hmm.
Drew, who's your hero?
I'm going to be kind of a cynic today. I'm going to go with the weather. The weather was the hero for the game. The weather was the only thing that allowed Trinity to win. I feel like if this game was played here at Sparks, like you said, Kellen, you took the words right out of my mouth. I think it's not even a ball game. I think the travel. I think the time of travel. I think leaving on a Friday to play Saturday just hurts you guys incredibly. The weather, the heat, the humidity. I think time of travel and the weather are just bad circumstances. That was the hero. That's why Trinity won.
It was close. It was fun. Kellen, who's your hero?
Yeah, good choice there, Drew. I'm gonna go with my Aunt Susie. Now, Aunt Susie, have you ever seen Remember the Titans?
Yeah.
The character that Hayden Panettiere plays is the daughter of the defensive coach, Yost. And you can just tell she knows football from a very, very early age. And you could tell she's going to grow up and be that lady on the sideline that just knows exactly what to do, is going to call guys out. And guys are going to say, what does she know? But she knows more than you do. Aunt Susie is our bomber defensive coach. So she runs the defense on the bomber side of the field for the defense, basically the scout team. And during the game, guys, I can't even tell you how many ice towels she put around guys' necks, massaging guys' cramps. She was giving her best shot on and off the field. It was so cool to see her give of herself as a servant warrior. Aaron Gunther's got to start paying this girl, my aunt. Unbelievable effort by her. Aunt Susie's the MVP of that game.
All right, I'm going to go with Travis McMillian. Scott Westring expects a group effort from his defense. Game one against Kalu, 12 Lutes had multiple tackles. Against Trinity, 14 POU players had multiple tackles. Somebody's got to lead the group, and it's been Travis McMillian, for both games so far. He had 11 total tackles against Trinity and forced a turnover. So my hero's Travis for this week. The team has a bye week this week, so everybody gets a little rest before the conference play begins. October 1st against Pacific at Sparks Stadium.
Great stuff, guys. So, folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, it'll be time for Lacey's Lutes. Find out what Lacey has in store for us next. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio.
Not everyone likes the way I dress. And I don't look like other people.
Me neither. Everyone is different, but no one deserves to be bullied. So be kind, stay positive, and support each other.
Every single day.
Welcome back, folks, to Mass Radio Sports Talk, presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio. If you want to call into the show, please do it. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. Again, that is 253-535-7332.
All right, so we're going to change it up a little bit here. This new segment is called Lacey's Lutes. Lacey's going to feature, you know, someone in the PLU athletic department. It may not even be an athlete. It's going to be someone inside the athletic department. She's going to tell us why, you know, they're noteworthy both on the athletic surface and off. So, Lacey, what do you got for us this week?
So we're going to kick it off with sophomore Becca Sorensen. She is the second baseman here at PLU for the Lutes softball team. During Becca's freshman season, she appeared in 35 games for the Lutes. She totaled 86 at-bats, including 33 hits, 10 RBIs, and 18 runs. On the defensive end, Becca contributed 65 putouts and 72 assists with only 6 errors all season. Aside from Becca being a stud on the field, she was able to work with the Mariners this season. She was a ball girl, so awesome. I had the opportunity to interview her earlier this week, so we're going to listen to that right now. I am here with Becca Sorensen. She is a sophomore here at PLU, an infielder for the softball team. Becca, what is your major?
I'm a nursing major.
Okay, awesome. And Becca was able to work with the Mariners this summer, so we're excited to hear about her experience. How did this opportunity come up?
So I actually found out about this opportunity in high school. One of my good friends had tried out for the position, and she told me that it was just like a really fun and exciting experience. And so I was like, oh, I should try out because, I mean, yeah, I love baseball, I love the Mariners, and I play softball. So I thought, I was like, oh, that'd be like a perfect fit for me as a job. So then the next year I decided to try out, and I sent in an athletic resume, and then I was offered an interview and an on-the-field tryout. And then I was selected to be one of 12 ball girls.
So, awesome.
Yeah, it was a cool experience.
That's great. So you started this summer. And how long did you work there over the summer?
I worked about 14 games total. We do what's called the ball girl draft. So we each get to pick a certain number of games. So we divide the summer in half. So we meet twice and pick the games at each draft. So I worked a total of 14 games, and this was my first season working.
Okay, what were some of the teams that you got to be a ball girl for?
I got to see them play the Yankees, Angels, the Astros.
Okay.
So
cool.
Good variety.
So, what exactly is the job of a ball girl?
So, most important thing for the ball girl is just to protect the fans. So, any foul balls that come your way, you just want to field them, hand them usually to a kid or, you know, just someone who's really outgoing. And then some of the other things that we did was catch pre-ceremonial first pitch for the game. Also just hang out with like the Mariner Moose and just really interact with the fans and
right.
help them have a good experience.
And have fun yourself too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So what were some cool experiences that you can bring back from this? Like, did you have any interactions with fans? Did you get to meet some of the players? Anything like that?
Like for players, I mean, it was just kind of, you know, the, hey, how's it going type of thing. But I mean, I got to, you know, talk to some of the behind the scenes people, like Aoki's translator.
Awesome.
He just would, you know, come up and talk to us. Also a lot of like the law enforcement that work the games, just, you know, getting to hear their experiences because a lot of them have worked there for, you know, 20 plus years. So,
yeah.
It was cool just to see the difference between my experience, which was only the summer, versus them who've worked there for a really long time.
Right. And did you have any particularly bad interactions with the fans, or were they fun for most of the part?
They were great for the most part. I mean, we usually offer them bubble gum, like the little kids from the dugout. And sometimes they're really excited about it. They're like, oh, that's so cool. And other times they're like, no, I don't want your bubble gum. Like, that's a weird question. But yeah, but most of like all the time, you know, they're really fun to hang out with.
Cool. All right. We heard you got a new coach, so I want you to be the first to introduce who that is on our radio show. So can you tell us their name and a little bit about them, what you're excited about for this season?
Yeah. Our new head coach is Brandy Gordon. She was previously an assistant coach for Seattle University, and we're really excited to have her be the new head softball coach here at PLU. I just really think that she creates a fun but also competitive environment for our team, which I think is really important, especially when spring rolls around, because our goal is to win games and we want to be competitive in our conference. Right. So I think she just really will be a great addition to our head coaching staff. And also she really understands like the role of a student athlete, and she understands that we have obligations outside of softball, and she respects that and wants to use our practice time effectively.
Great. So is there anything else you're looking forward to? I know you guys have started fall ball. Is there anything you're looking forward to this season? Any new players to look out for?
I just think we already have great team chemistry, and so I think you'll be able to see that reflected on the field when we play.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Becca, for your time, and good luck this season.
Thank you so much.
All right, that was Becca Sorensen of PLU Softball. How much fun could that be? I am extremely jealous of that. I mean, she gets the best seat in the house. She's on the field to watch all the Mariners games. Mm-hmm. You know, she gets to give a baseball to little kids who I'm sure just are ecstatic with it. I mean, that has to be a fun night for work.
I thought it was cool how they called it a draft. All the ball girls come together and they draft what games they're gonna work at.
Do they have to practice grounders, or how's that work?
I didn't ask that. I should ask that.
You gotta have some experience.
Yeah, I'm sure since you know she is a backstop at second base. I mean, I get to broadcast their games. I mean, you might as well just stick a second backstop at second. She is crazy. Like ball goes to second base, you know you're getting one out at least. And she swings it well. Bat at either 2 or 8 on the year. Just that kind of second. She bunts the ball very well. Bat in the 2 spot. She bats the 8 after the 7, the 1, and the 2 after the 1. It's very, very, very cool. Also, I mean, she gets to Major League Baseball. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm so, so jealous.
What a great experience for her. Well, the Lutes are in the middle of fall ball right now, and they will start their regular season in late February. So we're excited to catch up with her later this year.
Don't worry. 74 people were picked before me in the NFL draft. To fight childhood obesity, United Way and the NFL are helping kids play at least 60 minutes a day.
Okay, time for the team obstacle course. Yay!
What this place needs is more healthy kids. To get involved or donate, go to unitedway.org/play60.
Now I get it.
Welcome back, folks, to Mass Radio, sports talk presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio. If you want to call into the show, please do it. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. Again, one more time, that is 253-535-7332. Christian, what sport is next?
Well, let's talk a little POU volleyball. They opened conference play this past weekend. They were at home against Willamette and Lewis and Clark. POU battled against Willamette in a close game. They won. The Lutes won 3-2. And then on Saturday, they blanked Lewis and Clark 3-0. So, who stood out from Friday night's match?
So this is obviously a great start to the conference play for the Lutes, coming off a tough preseason. Someone who really stood out to me this last weekend is Kaylee Shiramizu. She led the team in digs for both games over the weekend. She had 39 against Willamette, and she is leading the team with an impressive 176 digs this season, which only includes 8 games. And I do not have the statistics on last night's game against UPS, but I'm sure she got some more there. Mm-hmm. Her defense really creates some offensive opportunities for the Lutes.
She's a libero. She's a defensive stud. They lean on her a lot. They put her and Taylor Konagome back there. When they do that, you might as well just put a ball return back there. Your balls, you know, it's pretty easy to do.
Ball return backstop. I like the analogy.
Hey, I'm just learning from you, Kellen. You know me, buddy. Taking my cues from you.
I do the same. Five loots into the night with double digit kills, including Danielle Skybeal, who led the way with 15, while Mackenzie Harris added 13. So, guys, I kind of relate kills in volleyball to momentum plays when it comes to maybe getting a big sack in football.
Yeah.
When it comes to, you know, basketball, maybe a nice little alley-oop or a nice slam dunk. In baseball, a grand slam, home run, big-time hit. Kills just give volleyball momentum. And you look at volleyball, talk about an encouraging sport. It's an up-and-hill kind of game. You get a point, you lose a point. But, again, I love in volleyball, after every point, no matter if they score, no matter if they give up the point, they come together, they huddle up, kind of like a football play, unless you're running the Oregon Chip Kelly no-huddle offense. We'll get to that later when it comes to the Niners. But that's what I love about volleyball. And you got to look at McKenzie. You got to look at Danielle. Big-time kills by them. And, again, that's given the Lutes the momentum they need to continue to win throughout this season.
So to furtherly relate it to basketball, Kellen, to further relate it to other sports, I feel like ball movement is key. When the women pass the ball well and try to score quick, they're deadly. But when they stop passing the ball well and they don't always put the ball through their setter and the libero doesn't start them off, when KO doesn't touch the ball every possession, that's when they run into trouble. If they pass well, there's no one in the conference who can beat them. But the two sets they dropped to Willamette was because they didn't pass the ball well. A lot of unforced errors, a lot of mental mistakes. So as you think the momentum comes from the kills, I think the momentum comes before the kills. When they pass the ball really well, and they have these really long rallies that work really, really well in women's volleyball, and they score.
Right, it's got to set up the kill.
Yes, the passing is what – if the Lutes pass the ball well, they won't lose. If they don't pass the ball well, and it's very easy to see when they're not doing it well and they're not getting the ball where they want to get it, they just rely on Gabrielle Alley to, like, make it something out of nothing. So when we get there, I mean, that's a problem. But until then, you know, the Lutes are going to have to figure out a way to make it work when they don't pass it well.
So they obviously played well. They beat Willamette 3-2. Then we'll move on to last Saturday night. Yeah. POU rolled over Lewis and Clark pretty easily, 3 straight sets. Who was impressive against the Pioneers?
I'd like to go back to just what I just said. Gabrielle Alley made a lot of something out of nothing. She had eight kills, 8.5 points in the night. But she doesn't get her attacks in the most regular setting. She gets a lot of backline rolls where she comes in from the back line and kind of directionally hits the ball. She doesn't attack a whole lot because they set her the ball when they have nowhere else to go with it because something broke down in their play. And I think that's what makes her so special. She's also the only one on the team who goes around the entire rotation and serves. Everyone else is a role player, comes in for 2 or 3 rotations, and that's it, or plays the middle blocker and comes out, or does something of that nature. She plays all the way around all 6 rotations.
You know, Drew and Lacey Christian, 3.5 athletes here, folks. Anytime there's a 0 on the opponent's column, you know you did something right. And all 19 Lutes saw the court as the PLU volleyball squad played literally every player on that roster. The whole team, in my opinion, was the MVP. It's a big time when you can get every single player in the ballgame. That's what coaches want. And sometimes coaches look at games on the schedule. You never want to go – you always want to focus one game at a time. But I know from being a coach's son, there's always those games where it's like, okay, hopefully our whole team can get in maybe in this game, maybe in that game. And so for them to get every player in is awesome. In my opinion, it's extremely important for how young this team is. They have 9 freshmen on the squad. Again, they had to make some tough cuts in preseason. And so for all of those 19 Lutes to play, in my opinion, it's pretty uncommon. So it was awesome to see.
Yeah, that's a great point and really fun to watch, too. Mackenzie Harris had 5 of the Lutes' 10 blocks against the Pioneers. Harris is 2nd in total blocks for the season with what was 26. I mean, they played a game last night, like right. I said. She's behind Danielle Skybeal, who leads the team. I'm guessing she leads the team now. I got to go check those stats, but she did have 30 blocks before the game last night, so we'll get to that.
So let's talk a little bit about that game against Puget Sound. Kind of, those games against Puget Sound, they happen on weird nights, I guess I'd call it. You
right.
know, Division III, everyone plays on the weekend. Well,
unless you play Puget Sound.
Unless you play Puget Sound, exactly. Those games, since the schools are so close, they can happen on a Tuesday. They can happen on a Wednesday. POU Volleyball played Puget Sound last night. Puget Sound I wasn't there, but they kind of rolled over POU with a 3-0 victory, so... You know, what should we take away from that game?
Well, you say they rolled over them. I can argue with that a little bit. I was not at the game, but I was able to check out the stats afterwards. The The Lutes were close behind the Loggers. In the first set, they lost 25-19, second 25-21, and third 25-23. So that it seemed like the Lutes were kind of gaining momentum, getting better, getting closer each time. But I kind of want to get Drew's perspective because I know you were at the game. What was the momentum in the gym?
Dill and I were on the broadcast, and PLU came out first set, quick 5-0 start. 5-0. Just blew them out of the water to begin with. Got we're getting everything they want. Puget Sound calls a timeout. The Lutes have not won a point out of a timeout yet at home. Not one point.
It's tough.
And it's so hard to watch because, you know, as soon as they call a timeout now, me and Dylan are like, their run's over. It's over. And they come out, and next thing you know, it's 15-7 Puget Sound on mental mistakes. PLU has not gotten beat yet. They've lost a bunch of games. They've lost a bunch of games to mental errors. They give away, me and Dylan count up there. We create a tally mark sheet on our programs. They give away an average of 7 points a set on mental errors, either a two violation where you have to set the ball, you have to hit it simultaneously with both hands, you can't directional it with one hand or the other, either serving long. They miss. They just give points away like it's cool. It's 6-7 points on average.
That's a lot.
That's
you
a
keep
lot.
Track of the other team?
Mm-hmm. No, we don't.
Come on. What if the other team gives away 6 or 7? Then it's mute. Then they both gave away none. If they handed points to each other, they gave away none. Like I don't know.
Well, we kind of do it after a timeout, Christian. When like because you know their run's gonna be over, so we want to see because that's when they've struggled the most. That's when we've been tallying because we're kind of interested at this point. Also, since Dylan's writing a volleyball story for the Mast currently.
Okay. All right. So. Like I said, POU 2-1 in conference so far. It's a decent start. We talked about their tough preseason schedule. They play teams who are either in the coach's top 25 poll or receive several votes for it. You know, on three separate occasions, they played Southwestern twice and they played another team another time. In everybody's opinion, does playing stiffer competition early in the season help a team or hurt a team? Because it can do both. What does it normally do? From your experiences, what does it do?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a two-edged sword, Christian. I think it depends how it works when it comes to playoffs. I know from football, non-conference games don't matter. And so I know for the past, my dad loves to schedule tougher opponents when it comes to non-conference games because, you know what, at the end of the day, they don't really matter. Linfield just played Mary Hardin Baylor. Talk about the D3 game of the year when it comes to non-conference games. And so I look back at the 2012 PLU football team. We were 7-2, and we made the playoffs. 2 years previously, 2010, we were 8-1, but didn't make the playoffs because our non-conference schedule was so weak, and we barely won those games. We lost to Linfield, so that's why we didn't make the playoffs. 2012, we played Kalu, who was 10th in the nation at that point, lost by 10, played Linfield, who was number 3 in the country, lost by 3. And so that's why we were able to make the playoffs, because they looked at our strength of schedule, and that's why we made it. So I think it's an awesome move by Kevin Aoki to challenge his young team to play against tougher opponents in kind of that preseason schedule to get them ready for conference.
Yeah, and it's always the I want now, I want more, I want more, I want it now culture that we live in today that, you know, you got to understand that, you know, I'm a senior. Kellen, you're a super senior. Lacey's a senior. I mean, Christian's going to be the only one left here next year. And, you know, we want it now. We want the volleyball team to be good now. We want the football team to be good now. We want the soccer teams to be good now. We have to understand that the men's soccer team and the women's volleyball team are young. Coach Aoki ain't going anywhere. And neither are these women for 3 more years. You know, this is Division III basketball. This is Division III basketball, Division III football, Division III volleyball. There's no one-and-dones here. You know what I mean? They're building a program. They're building for senior years. And I think you have to give Coach a lot of respect for scheduling these teams and not just trying to give his freshmen a couple easy wins. I think he's trying to build character. However, do I think you need to play one slack team in the beginning to get your confidence after you get your butt kicked a few times? Absolutely you do. You need one confidence builder. But I think at the end of the day, you have to schedule tough in the preseason and the out-of-conference schedules because that's the only way to get better.
Yeah.
And if you want to get better, you have to play better opponents. It's why men's basketball goes to Seattle U and Portland State and goes to Central every year.
Yeah. And I really do think putting a team where they have to face adversity is going to help them to grow chemistry on the court. I mean, you can only grow when you're at your lowest point, right? So I really think it's important for that. And I think having been put in those situations where they have to really come together can help them in this conference play when they are faced with adversity in conference. So I think ultimately it's a good decision to have a tougher preseason.
So I'll play devil's advocate here. When the team is picked to come out and win the conference, but they get beat up a little bit in the preseason, can it work the opposite way where they go, oh, maybe we're not as good as people think we are? Mm-hmm. Is that a possibility?
Well, my question is, Christian, is that a bad thing? Is that a bad thing? I think that's a great gut check. I mean,
it can be a bad thing.
PLU volleyball, for lack of better terminology, has been bulletproof in the last 10 years. Absolutely bulletproof. What's wrong with a good old gut check?
I think if you get a taste of losing too, you don't want to go back to that. So they got a taste of what it feels like to lose, and they're now determined not to lose again.
To your point, Christian, I think it comes down to coaching. I think if you have a great coaching philosophy, you see your team struggle. Sometimes coaches can even throw in the towel a little bit early when it comes to they see, gosh, we're six games out. And so I think to your point, there's teams that have been good in the past that coaches don't quite understand how to deal with losing. And so then that kind of trickles down to their team. But I think with Kevin Aoki, I think you look at his resume, he's been around the block. He's had great seasons. He's had some tough seasons.
Been around the block?
He's been around the
city,
block.
The town, the country. He's been here for a while.
And so he, in my opinion, to your point there, Christian, I think, in my opinion, Kevin can handle this team better than any coach could when it comes to the Northwest Conference of, hey, he's been there, he's done that, he knows how to lose, he knows how to win. I think they'll be just fine. Folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will be taking a look at another fall sports team. Find out what team that is next. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk, presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio.
No more boys will be boys. No more, what's the big deal?
No more,
it's just the way he is.
No more, he just has a temper.
No more, but he's such a nice guy.
No more, but he has such a bright future.
No more, not my problem.
No more, I'll say something next time.
No more. Why didn't she tell anyone?
No more. Why doesn't she just leave?
No more. I'm sure they'll work it out.
No more. She seems fine to me.
No more.
What was she wearing?
No more. She was drunk.
No more. He was drunk.
No more. She was asking for it.
No more. She never said no.
No more. Not in this family.
No more. Not on this team.
No more. We don't talk about that.
No more bystanding.
No more ignorance.
No more excuses.
No more.
Welcome back, folks, to Mass Radio Sports Talk, presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio. If you wanted to call into the show, please do it. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. Once again, that is 253-535-7332.
So, guys, I'm stepping in here for Christian in the producer's chair, working the soundboard and the laptop. We're going to have a blast.
Thanks, Drew.
And let's talk about a little men's and women's soccer. Lacey, let's kick us off here.
All right. So the Lutes played Whitworth on Saturday, women's soccer, that is.
Managed
to score one goal with the win. Michaela Grady was assisted by Haley Smoot and put the ball in the back of the net late in the second half. The Lutes kind of dominated possession most of the game. And weren't able to score until late in the game, which was kind of a shocker to them. They were wanting to get some goals earlier on, kind of gain that momentum. But they did seem to have possession most of the game and came out with the win. So that's all that really matters.
They've taken like 50 plus shots in the last three games and have three goals to show for it. Last year, their corner efficiency, they were 1-for-93 on corners.
What?
1-for-93.
But they're still successful.
So here's my thing. They can't score on a set piece worth anything. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you can talk to them about it. They laugh. They think it's hilarious. That they will put the ball in the box right where it should be and just no one can put it in the goal. Their shot discrepancy was 14-2 at one point, and they didn't have a goal on the board. They get these shots. They just can't put it in the net. They're 3-for-50 something right now on goal scoring efficiency. Hey, I understand that's soccer. Soccer's a tough sport. I played. I get it. I do. But you could fit a lot of balls in that soccer net.
Yeah, but
a lot of them.
You can also argue that the amount of times that they're attacking is probably wearing down their defensive opponent.
Absolutely.
So they are able to squeak one out and get the win with it. So
there were so many almosts. There were so many almosts. And time of possession is not even fair. The women dominate possession. They dominate the shot chart. They dominate everything, and they win 1-0. And you're just like, huh? Like, come on, guys. Let's put a couple more in that. Make me and Dylan's heart be a little bit slower. Because we're up there on the edge of our seats the entire game. And then Mikayla Grady comes across the net and absolutely just smashes a winner.
Right.
And she was like, she'd missed like five or six, like one she would have hit before that, and she was so frustrated with herself, and she hit it. As soon as she hit it, she just dropped to her knees and just yelled, "Finally! Finally, I hit it right."
She yelled that out.
Oh, loud. We heard it from the box. It was hilarious.
That's awesome.
So the Lutes saw more action on Sunday when they played at home against Whitman. Kayla Rizel had a hand, or should I say foot, in both scores in the second half, breaking the 0-0 deadlock in the 65th minute with her second goal this season off a cross from Lena Monroe before finding Kelsey Hathaway in the 85th minute to double the Lutes. So guys, they're 5-0-1 and 2-0 when it comes to the Northwest Conference lead. Now, when it comes to ties, Drew, how does that kind of work? Is it one of those things where, because in my opinion, I think from talking to Takara, when it comes to like if it's a game that's going to possibly decide whether you go to the playoffs or not, they're going to do penalty kicks. Is that what it's called?
No. Oh, yeah, when you get to the playoffs, well, there's a few-step process. First off, I hate soccer for this one reason. It's the only sport you can tie in the regular season and everyone be okay with it.
Right.
Tying, it's like kissing your sister. That's what tying is. It's like kissing your sister. It's like something like you have to do but you don't want to do it. You know what I mean? It's like kissing your sister.
On the cheek, though.
Yeah, exactly. So here's my thing. So you have played 90 minutes, right? I don't understand how you can't score a goal in 90 minutes. It confuses me sometimes. Really does. I mean, I understand with Takara Mitsui in the back four we have, why no one can score on the Lutes. I get that. But the Lutes get enough chances. I don't understand how you don't score a goal some days. So let's start there. If you don't score, you get two 10-minute extra time periods.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? After that, you go to penalty kicks in the playoffs. In the regular season, you don't. In the regular season, you just get 1 point for a tie. So soccer points, how it goes, if you win, you get three points in the standings. If you tie, you get 1 point. And if you lose, you get nada. Okay? That's why the Lutes defense is so important. That's why we talk about it so much. That's why we talk about Takara Mitsui so much is with her and Kelly White and Lena Moreno back there, you're not going to score a lot of goals.
Right.
And it's proven. And when the Lutes do score, the floodgates open and they pour on like four of them. Because, you know, a 2-0 game in soccer is considered a domination. A 4 or 5-0 game is considered absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right? And I think Lena Moreno and Kelly White are doing their job back there. And let me just tell you, that ball from Lena Moreno that found Kayla Rizel for the header was like the 15th shot of the game that Kaylee put away. It was absolutely incredible.
Well, okay. So going off of that, we already talked about Takara a bit, and just to speak to her greatness, she's tallied five shutouts this season over the last weekend. She's up to five shutouts. She played all 90 minutes in both games this weekend, so she's locking it down in the defensive end.
Yeah, it's really good to see Takara playing as well as she is. I mean, she hasn't touched the ball a whole lot. I gave her a hard time when I saw her in the gym the other day. I was like, hey, you know, all these shutouts on these defensive players of the week, have you touched the ball in three games? I'm just curious. She goes, no, I really haven't. That's just because Kelly and Lena have been doing such a good job.
Right.
Like, that back four, man, it's impenetrable. Like, you might as well just go home. There's no point to even showing up if you're trying to work the ball through that back four.
Right.
It's pretty interesting. They're away this weekend. And then men's soccer is here this weekend. I'm excited to do their games. I know I've been extremely tough on them lately. And you know, they've won a few games, and they think that's great for them. I still think they're very young. Got a lot of room to grow, and I'm excited to watch them broadcast this weekend. But, Kellen, you want to give us a clue into our next segment here?
Yeah, I would love to, Drew. So, folks, up next, we turn our sights towards the tough deal of the week. Find out what is our tough deal. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio.